Hey, we have a very special guest today. Her name is Emily Miller. She was the deputy press secretary for Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice. She's a journalist. She's an associate producer at ABC News and a self-described, I love this, gun owner, Sunday school teacher, and senior editor at the Washington Times. Emily, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Ty. Clearly, you read my Twitter bio.
That's where I saw it on Twitter. I thought that was pretty cool. Tell us, yeah. And before we get to politics, I read briefly your story entitled "Emily Gets Her Gun." Tell us about that just a little bit.
Well, it's a series I've been working on in the Washington Times about getting a legal handgun in D.C., which has taken now 3 months. I've written 17 stories, and now this week I testified before the D.C. City Council about how hard it is to get a gun unnecessarily when I'm trying to exercise my Second Amendment rights. And at this point, I've spent $465 in fees, taken 3 days off work, and I'm still waiting to get a legal handgun.
Mm. Unbelievable. Now, I saw that you actually had the gun on Twitter.
I don't actually.
Oh, you don't have it?
Well, no, it's because of the way D.C. works, you can't actually pick up a gun when you buy a gun.
Oh.
So what you do is you have to pay for it to be transferred. There's one dealer in D.C., Charles Sykes. I pay $125 to have it transferred to him, and then I'm not allowed to have it until my registration packet is approved. I take a written test, took a 5-hour test, several other things, got fingerprinted, and then I have a 10-day waiting period, and then I go back and the police pick up my gun and take it for a ballistics test. Then I get to take possession of it.
So you have the right to bear arms after the 10-day waiting period, the ballistics test, 4 days off work, $425 in fees. Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, but Ty, you forgot the 5 hours of a class.
Oh, my apologies. Go ahead.
The written test that I had to take, I passed, thankfully. I can't even tell you all the other things, vision test. But actually, even after all that, I don't get to bear arms. I get to keep arms because in Washington, D.C., you are not allowed to take your gun out of your house. There's no laws of open or concealed carry, so I can keep but not bear.
That is unbelievable. Now, you had a situation where you felt threatened, you called the police, and you could have protected yourself if you had a firearm, but the police said, well, we really couldn't help you. Is that what happened?
Well, I was house-sitting, dog-sitting for friends, and was walking the dog. I stupidly left the front door open, but I came back and found two men in the house who were robbing the house.
Wow.
Luckily, I kind of talked them into leaving. They, you know, nothing happened, but the police said when they got there, you know, we don't think you should be in the house. We don't know if they've left windows open, doors jammed. I mean, that's their point, to come back. And so sleeping in the house that night is when this first occurred to me. What I did is put a dresser against the inside of the bedroom door.
Right.
But instead, you know, if I had just had a firearm in my night table, I would have probably slept a lot better and felt a lot more safe.
Right.
That's what started me on this endless seeming quest to get a gun and just sort of showing all the laws in D.C. that are put in place in order. The Supreme Court, as you know, overturned in 2008 the 30-year ban in D.C. on guns, but the city council has put in all these crazy regulations to stop law-abiding citizens from getting guns. And so that's what I testified before the council about this week. And I don't think the liberals in the council were paying very close attention to me. they grilled me extensively, but they didn't seem too interested in what I had to respond to them with.
I can't believe that in the United States of America, that's the trouble that you're having. That's unbelievable to me. It really
is. This isn't the United States of America. It's Washington, D.C., and they
right.
consider themselves their own rule of law and don't apply to the Constitution. In fact, I asked the head of the city council, the chairman of the city council, Kwame Brown, I asked him directly, face-to-face, do you believe in the Second Amendment of the Constitution? He hemmed and hawed, and finally said, I don't think there should be more guns in D.C., But when you have a chairman of a city council who actually denies the reality of the Constitution, it's not the United States.
Right.
Wow. That's something. Are you a supporter of the NRA?
I'm not a member because I don't own a gun, but they're doing a very great job. And they've, you know, brought in a lot of people to this hearing, and, you know, they're doing their best to help with the laws in D.C., but really it's such an uphill battle.
In your opinion, and you're a reporter, and you've done extensive writing on this, why do you think the left wing or the leftists want to make sure we don't have guns?
I think part of it is ignorance. I'm giving them the benefit
wow.
of the doubt.
Okay.
None of them have ever touched guns. They, you know, when I was at the city council, the Mendelson, the chairman of the committee, asked me, "Well, how did you get trained for a gun if you didn't take the safety class that we mandate?" Because I did take it eventually. I said,
right.
"I went to the NRA firing range and took the class." And he said, "On your own?" I mean, there's this liberal assumption that people are lazy and irresponsible and stupid, and unless something's mandated by law, you won't do it. I think that's one of the big problems. And I also think that I think a lot of it's ignorance and just assuming people are stupid. And they also, I think, they've never touched guns. They don't know that guns don't just explode in your hands and don't just go off. And, you know, they're just pieces of metal. It doesn't explode. And, you know, I try to explain to them the basic safety things with guns, which I learned in 10 minutes at the NRA. Just
right.
don't put your finger on the trigger. Know what you're shooting. Know what you're shooting behind. Don't point at anything that you don't want to shoot. I mean, it's a lot easier than driving a car, was the point I made to them.
No question about it. All right. Well, keep us up to date on whether you ever, we'll follow you on Twitter and see when you actually get your gun. I'm sure you'll post it, right?
Emily gets her gun at some point in the future. We'll put it that way.
Awesome. All right, let's move on to politics there. Tell me what your assessment is of the Republican primary to date, and do you have a winner picked?
Oh, no. I think it's Romney's to lose, put it that way. Newt obviously says he's going to stay in through the summer, stay in through the convention. I think if he keeps falling the way he fell between South Carolina and Florida, it's going to be real hard. Although he says he doesn't need money, he does need money to stay in the race. And he also, you know, if he continues to fall, which, you know, remains to be seen, you know, where he's going to be competitive, the upcoming states on the calendar, Nevada, Massachusetts, are not favorable for him. They're Romney land.
Right.
And caucuses, which are expensive. But if he continues to stay in and continues to lose, I do think that the rest of the party will start calling him a spoiler, you know, let him not have Romney wasting money on Gingrich and time. But you know what? As fast as Gingrich rose, and I'll say as fast as Bachman rose, and as fast as everyone else in this race has risen, and Romney has a lot of weaknesses still. I don't think you can count it out already. You know, Romney does not do well with very conservative voters. Does not do well with the Tea Party. And so, you know, and the base is a little not sure he's one of them. So we'll see. I mean, he's not in the numbers with Obama. He doesn't do very well. So the race is far from over, but it is Romney's to lose.
Interesting. With that thought in mind, a Romney against Barack Obama, what do you think in a general election?
Well, so far, those matchups in the polls, Obama wins, which is sort of surprising.
No doubt.
But, you know, again, we're so far from the general at this point. And Obama is doing so badly in the polls himself. The economy is now, we've got these new projections from the Congressional Budget Office this week, saying that the deficit this year is going to be $1.1 trillion, that unemployment is actually going to go up probably to 8.8%. And, you know, all the president has proposed is taxing the, quote, rich, the supposed rich. So his popularity, it doesn't seem like it's going to turn around because the economy is not going to turn around under his policies. And, but you never count Obama out. You never say it's a done deal because Romney's matchup with him don't do that well.
Understood. We're talking today to Emily Miller, senior editor at the Washington Times. To borrow your phrase, extinguishing the debt inferno. Does anybody, a Republican or Democrat, have the political will to actually get this spending under control and actually balance the budget?
Well, I would say, I would argue that Paul Ryan does. And his budget last year, everything he's fought for in the past year, has been the really concrete ways to cut the debt, and that is reforming Medicare and Social Security. Everyone in Washington knows the real money is in these entitlement plans.
Right.
Medicare is going bankrupt in now 9 years, 8 years actually. Social Security is already in the red. I mean, that's where the expense is. And people, there is a lot of overspending here. And you've seen, you know, in the fight over the super committee and the debt ceiling, there's still trillions that can be cut. But trillions, it'll be a trillion over 10 years, which is $100 billion a year,
right,
when you have a $1 trillion deficit each year. I mean, you just can't, you really can't cut your way out of this debt, out of a $15.3 trillion debt. And what needs to be done is entitlement reform. To their credit, the Republican candidates all propose some sort of entitlement reform, especially Medicare, in their platforms. And I applaud them. You know, the Democrats, you know, they have refused to even acknowledge that Medicare needs to be changed, and changed probably to the premium support plans that Romney and Paul and Newt all support, which is an optional, let people choose if they want to go out of the government plan, and it would save so much money and make such a difference to the solvency of the program. And so, you know, really the Republicans are standing up to the plate on this. The issue is whether the voters are going to be open-minded about this. I mean, you just say to any seniors, we want to reform Social Security, Medicare. You can even say to them, which is true in all of their plans, it will not affect anyone under 55. And they still completely freak out because they don't hear it. They hear, my benefits are going to be cut. I'm going to be faced with it. But the reality is, anybody under 55 themselves probably support some sort of privatization of their retirement, whether Social Security or Medicare,
right,
because they know it's not going to be there for them. I know
that's
it's
right.
not going to be there for them. I'm sure not counting on Social Security or Medicare. So, you know, it's just, but politically, senior citizens vote heavily, and, you know, it's just really hard to get that education out there.
Tell me this, if you're advising one of the candidates like a Romney or a Newt Gingrich or a Rick Santorum, How do you advise them to effectively communicate that someone over 55, their Social Security is not going to be affected? How do you communicate that where folks actually understand?
Ty, it's interesting you said that, because every one of my story, I write column every day, and a lot of it's on debt and deficit.
Right.
And my editor started cutting out my line, which I have in every story, is this would not affect anyone under 55. And I said, you have to leave it in, because I get so many comments on my stories from seniors who are angry that's going to affect them, and it just has to be reminded. And I think, I mean, maybe it has to be part of the stump speech every time. It has to lead, and they don't do this now. You listen to the debates, you never hear them say it won't affect anyone under 55. They have to say it up front every time. If you are currently retired, if you are 10 years from retirement, this will not affect you. This is for the younger generations who won't have those benefits that you have. They don't do that, and they really need to start doing that if they're going to sell this to the American public. And the American public has got to wake up. I mean, they think, you know, cutting these silly programs, which are silly, you know, like, who knows, salmon fishing studies and those
right.
kind of things. People get really angry about that, and I understand it because it is silly and it is a waste of their taxpayer dollars, but it's just, when we're spending $100 billion every month towards, or borrowing, I should say, then we really need to focus on the big things, and the big things are going to hurt, which is entitlements.
Do you think, you mentioned Washington, D.C. was not exactly part of the United States of America, certainly when it comes to the Second Amendment. Do they have a handle? Do they understand there's actually a debt crisis in Washington, D.C.? Do they have a grasp on it like someone in Georgia might recognize?
They do. I will say the politicians do get it. I mean, they have to sit through enough briefings and they have enough committee meetings that they do understand it. It's just that they're more interested in keeping their seats than doing what's right. And that's why you see, you know, I wrote a story today, which I thought was great. These group of Republican freshman Tea Partiers, just about five of them, got together, and they had this idea that not only, which a lot of members do symbolically, is that they don't spend all of their budget for their offices, their congressional offices, and they give some back at the end of the year. And we've heard those stories before. Rand Paul famously gave $500,000 last year, his first year, back to the Treasury. Well, this Jeff Landry, who's a first-term congressman from Louisiana, looked into where the money goes when it's not spent and given back.
Right.
And he says it lingers. It found out that it just lingers in this Treasury account, or lingers in an account before it goes back to the Treasury, and then it goes back to the Treasury without any note on how it's to be spent. And as the congressman said to me, well, as far as I know, it goes back and some dude writes a check to Soliandra with it. You know, I don't know. So what he and a group of
outrageous.
Them did is they put pooled theirs together, which came to $1.4 million just in 1 year, which is significant, from all of their offices. And they've written a letter to Speaker of the House Boehner yesterday, and they said, we want this money going directly back to the Treasury. And there is this really cool special account, if you look online at the Treasury Department, it's gifts to the Treasury to pay down the national debt. And it's a real account. So, you know, I've always said Warren Buffett should be writing his check to that account as opposed to telling us all to raise everyone's taxes.
Yeah, he really should.
But you can actually give money that is directly given to reduce the debt, and that's where they want their money to be done. So right now, the Speaker's office and is sort of like trying to figure out how to do this. You know, this is completely throwing them off base. But, you know, it's just supposed to show you that these freshmen are coming up with these creative ideas, and they know, you know, that if we're going to face the debt, we have to start at the little stuff, but also we have to stop looking at Washington in the same way and start doing things differently.
No doubt about it. We're talking today to Emily Miller, senior editor at the Washington Times. If folks want to find out more about you, read your stories online, because this goes all around the country, of course, how do they do that?
Well, WashingtonTimes.com, of course, is our website. You can also follow me on Twitter at Emily Miller, normal spelling, and on Facebook, it's Emily Miller DC.
Wonderful. Emily, wonderful. Thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it greatly.
Thank you. Have a good week.
All right, you too. All right, we're